Eating is an emotional experience, which is why managing your weight needs to be a psychological one. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bat Flip, episode 83. Going to recap your week six fab action, the top ads over at the NFBC, all league formats. Take some awesome listener questions and much, much more to get you going on this week seven of fantasy baseball action. You can find myself on Twitter at BDIntric and my co-host, on as always, on Twitter at BatFlipCrazy. Toby, how we doing, man?
We're doing pretty well, Bubba. We're just plugging along, you know. Nothing too exciting. It's been a nice little pitching day, which is always nice to have happen. Although we were talking before the show, you know, already like all the closer speculations that everybody had this week are out the window. Thielbar giving up runs, McGee holding it down for Tyler Rogers. So, you know, another wacky week in fantasy baseball for sure. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It is a very wacky week. We were talking earlier and like, DFS, I had some stacks I loved. Like my favorite stack of the day was the Royals, and they scored seven runs off the bullpen like I wanted to, but that's after they pulled Salvi and Witt. So it's just like, doesn't even matter. Like, freaking awesome. Great. Yeah, pitching was good, though. It was a fun pitching night. And like watching Shohei go seven strong, and then they put him in right field to keep his bat in the lineup. That was cool to see, because I don't know about if you do. I know you don't. You listen to like a bunch of podcasts, probably not the ones I listen to also. But sometimes I need to go outside of the fantasy realm, and I like baseball still. So The Athletic came out with their baseball series Monday through Friday, and on Tuesday, Starkville, which I never listened to and I should have, with Doug Glanville and Jason Stark. They have great interviews, and this week they had Joe Maddon on, and he legit talked about how he wants to start treating Shohei once he goes deeper into games, and this was putting him in the outfield. This was just, like, he just talked about it on the episode that was released Tuesday morning. It was like, oh, wow, this is awesome. But
Maximizes talent, you know, it's great.
I will say to anybody, and then we'll go back to fantasy, if you do like regular baseball stuff, like even Madden, they went into the deep conversations of the whole Pujols thing, like how it went down, the thoughts behind it and all that. It was really cool to listen to the manager basically talk about how his conversations with the ownership and everything went down to basically release one of the best players of our generation to watch play baseball. Outside, like Trout's like the guy everyone talks about. Yes, he is probably one of the best ever. But Pujols was pretty darn good, like pretty good.
In his heyday?
Yeah. It's like a lot of the younger kids might not realize just how good Pujols was. Like, he was amazing. So it was cool
to steal bases, too.
Yeah.
Like
10 to 15 bags at times. Yeah. Like, he was scary.
It's nuts.
Yeah, different era, though. Different era for sure. But, we're here to talk fantasy baseball. But, it was a fun one. But let's talk some NFBC. Let's talk about, like I say, every week we go to the player movement page. We talk about the top, you know, 10 or so, give or take, fantasy ads for the week and see how like we kind of view them going forward. And one of the top ads, because we kind of talked about it a little bit last week, Toby, catchers, like they were like the cat's meow for a while there in fantasy. There were so many good ones, and then they started getting injured and started getting injured. Well, now the Braves have a new catcher, William Contreras, the younger brother of Wilson Contreras of the Chicago Cubs. And William got picked up in 334 leagues, as high as 225. He had a really big week coming up. He's going to be the guy going forward because it's him and Jeff Mathis, because Jackson and D'Arnaud are going to be out for quite some time. So I got some big names, went after Contreras. I didn't get him anywhere because I didn't feel like spending a ton of money on a catcher, but I do completely back this situation. I think he's very good. I wouldn't have spent 225, but I like him a lot. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think he's solid. If you look at his projection, you know, he's about 240 batting average, you know, five home runs, you know, around 20 to 25 runs in RBI each. And then that's in 215 plate appearances. So you multiply that by, you know, 1.5, 2 for the amount of time that he's going to get. You know, that's a decent little clip there for a catcher. So can certainly see why people, especially those that lost out on D'Arnaud and some others. I mean, I've got like prayers up for JT Realmuto, you know, getting hit in his knee. So really hoping that you know, it's tough when you lose a good catcher like D'Arnaud. It's hard to replace that, but Contreras is probably the closest thing to it. A little bit of history. I've only been in one dynasty league ever. And when I joined it, I definitely went straight for winning the championship. And the first player that I drafted, though, in that dynasty league that was a minor league player was William Contreras.
I like it. Yeah. I like it. I like it a lot. It's weird because you talk, you know, dynasty leagues, there's like certain philosophies on what kind of players to keep, this, that, and the other. Catchers is a tricky one. Because to get like a unique catcher is like awesome. Like, you know, there's Joey Bartz. There's totally blanking right now on the Adley Rutschman and all these guys that are the next big thing. But back then it was Posey. But there's only like a handful of those. Like there's so many that you're thinking, okay, they're going to be great. And then you're just like, yeah, they're okay. We can kind of play that game. Where Contreras, he's got the pedigree. Like I agree with you. I went after, it was either him or someone else in the Braves system, just because the way they produce catchers, like they're one of the teams I feel like personally produce them well. So I think that's an interesting philosophy, because it's hard to hold catchers in dynasty, but at the same time, like you've been in dynasty leagues. If you are looking for catchers on the waiver wire, good luck. Like it's absolutely brutal, like really bad.
Half of my trades involve catchers. Yeah. I mean, it was William Contreras. I had Luis Campusano on my team. I had Bo Naylor on my team on Cleveland. You know, I had all those guys, and I just cycle through them, trading them for things. I got, I don't know if it was for him, but I got, I managed to get I have Yasmani Grandal and Wilson Contreras as my catcher. So I'm good for
that. That's outstanding. You know, definitely be good for a little while there. Talking about dynasty leagues, the next most added player in 234 leagues, as high as 177. He was pretty low in a lot of my leagues, actually, probably like 20 to 50, 60 bucks, give or take, is Trevor Larnach. And it's got like, he was the number three prospect, I believe, for the Minnesota Twins. Good power bat. He was behind Kirilloff in the whole reign of the outfield prospects for the Twins. But, you know, Kirilloff goes down, Buxton goes down. They kind of got their hand forced. It feels kind of like the whole Soto coming up thing. Not that I'm not comparing Larnach to Soto by any means, but the whole idea that we weren't supposed to see Larnach yet, and then they kind of got their hand forced, just like the Nationals did. We'll see how Larnach does. I wasn't super aggressive on him because I think there's so many moving parts with Garlick and Cave and other guys in that Twins outfield. I know Kirilloff, they're saying he's going to get a cortisone shot. He might be back soon. I don't know. So I was kind of like timid on the bids. How did you approach Larnach this week?
Yeah, I had very timid bids as well. I mean, I wasn't, you know, a lot of my focus was around pitching as usual. With Larnach, he was on my radar, but just not somebody that I really wanted to break the bank for. You know, it's been a while, obviously, like 2019 is the last minors that we have to look at. But, you know, above single A, he's struggled with strikeouts. You know, the projections aren't as hot at him as him. I don't think his hit tool is nearly as good as Kirilloff. So I wasn't that interested. I definitely had him in a couple conditional bid lines, but nothing outrageous.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was at. It was like, could I see him going off? Yeah, sure. Like the pedigree is there, but I haven't seen it like we've seen it with Kirilloff and others that came up to make me want to go crazy for him. And also with you, I had other things I needed to fill in my lineup. And it was kind of like, yeah, I'm going to back off on this one for now. The next big ad, and people, like some people snooped up Tony Gonsolin last week for kind of a discount, kind of speculating he's the next guy to take over with Dustin May going down. Well, everyone else grabbed him this week in 203 leagues, as high as 219. He's still going to be kind of slow go, and he's not going to be fully ramped up for a little while still, a couple more weeks at least. But you're kind of stashing him going, okay, we know what Gonsolin can do in the past. We know he's going to be on the Dodgers. Like, the whole situation's great. He's only going to cost more and more money the closer we get. So I didn't get any Gonsolin, but were you in on Gonsolin this week?
Not this week. I got him last week in a number of different places. And I think we talked a little bit about him, but I mean, he's worth it. Even if he's on the bench for another 3 weeks, you know, you still get him for 18 weeks or whatever it is of the season. And I think he's lights out when he pitches, and he's on the Dodgers, who theoretically are a good team. I know they really are a good team, and they're just in a drought right now, but who knows, maybe Trevor Bauer will tear them apart. You never know.
They're still going to win.
We can only be so lucky.
Yeah, so they're still going to win the West. I'm watching them lose, and trust me, it makes me happy every day I see them lose. But I'm like, they're going to win the West. Like, if any team in baseball could win like 25 of 30, like twice in a row, it's going to be the Dodgers. Like, it wouldn't shock me at all. So I'm just going to wait until it's September and they're like 15 games out. Then I'll feel it'll come more comfortable. But as long as they have a chance, yeah, I'm not gonna get my hopes up. They're too good of a ball club. But something that doesn't involve the pickups this week, but you mentioned it with holding Gonsolin for 3 weeks. I want to throw it out to the listeners, because I've held Framber Valdez all season since I drafted him. But I know in a lot of my 12 teamers, he's sitting out there still, and he started to throw bullpens this week, and they're speculating potentially at the best the end of May, most likely early June, he could be back. And if that's the case, you can try to stash him now. He's just like Gonsolin, well worth the stash, in my opinion. So if you can go and, you know, get some Framber cheap right now, because that price is just going to keep going up as more reports come out like, hey, he's getting closer. Hey, he's getting closer. I know in a lot of my 12-team leagues, he's out there. 15s, I doubt it. I really doubt it. I haven't seen him out there. But 12-teamers, if you're in those leagues, keep an eye on it. If you can stash him somewhere in leagues without ILs, obviously, because most guys put him on their IL. But he's out there, so keep an eye on that too. All righty, the next big ad, Tyler Rogers, we kind of hinted at that, picked up in 188 leagues for as high as 134. Now, see, I've been preaching that the Tyler Rogers things. I still think he's going to walk away with a handful of saves this year. It is good to see McGee pounce back, because I have a lot of Jake McGee, and that was getting a little stressful at times, back-to-back days with saves. But the thing we keep talking about, and apparently these people don't listen to the show, go and get the speculative closers, but don't break the bank for the speculative closers. Like, there should have been no three-digit bids on Tyler Rogers. It's just like, we'll get to some guys that got added. Like, I got Blake Treinen for like $3. Like, or you might have to spend more on Surly's, but I got him cheap. Just on, like, you didn't have to break the bank for everybody type stuff, is my point. You got Thielbar. How much did you get Thielbar for?
I got him for between $3 and $13 in every single one of my leagues, which is painful. But I wasn't even going to start him this week. I was actually just going to have him on the bench, you know.
But the point is he's probably got – I wouldn't be shocked if they end with similar save lines by the end of the season and you didn't break the bank for him. So it's like, that's the premise of everything we keep saying every week, is I like Tyler Rogers. I like speculating on him, but let's timid things down a little bit. But did you have anything else on Tyler Rogers? Sorry.
Oh, no. I was just complaining because – the Rays moved Ryan Yarbrough's start, so he only has one start against the Yankees. So I swapped in Thielbar on a couple teams, and it has not worked out well for me. On Tyler Rogers, I mean, one of the things is, again, we're still really early in the season, so check out this stuff. I mean, he has a 190 BABIP, a 91% strand rate. He only has a 12.5% strikeout rate, a 7.5% K-minus walk, a 6% swinging strike rate. Now, granted, I think he's generating like a ton of ground balls. Yeah,
two-thirds. He's a side-arming sinker ball machine.
Yeah, absolutely, which is fantastic. But still, like, these numbers are not sustainable that he's putting up right now. And so there is like a little bit of a limit to the ceiling on the profile that he's throwing with right now, which is obviously a different profile than he had last year when he struggled a little bit. So I would just caution, like, normally when I'm going for those higher bids, and this actually is not, I'm kind of lying here, because I did $77 on Brian Garcia. Desperation makes you do desperate things. But is generally you want to have like a guy that's skilled as well, you know, at least. But
and the one thing I'll say about Rogers is I'm trying to see his 2019. That's the season I want from him. It's like, can he get back to that where His swinging strike was only 8.2%, which he'd still like more of, but his overall profile was much more in line with what you'd want to see, basically. He had like zero barrels, I think, at one point. He had no home runs allowed that season. Stuff long, and his strikeout rate was over 20%. So now you're starting to get into at least something respectable. So hopefully that gets there. If not, you know, if you're in a saves hold league, he's still going to be good for you, but it'll be interesting to see how that goes. He is the next man up. In the bullpen. I know, like, I'm pretty confident in that. But as long as McGee gets it done, man. Like, the one thing with the Giants, though, they're not blowing teams out. That's why McGee's been getting days off for guys like Rogers to get a chance. It's like there's multiple days in a row where they're getting the late inning guys into play.
Them and the A's, man. They're, like, all winning by one run every game.
It's a beautiful thing sometimes. It's also stressful at the same time. Next up, the last week we talked a lot about Tyler O'Neill. Now we talk about his teammate, Harrison Bader, who got picked up a lot last week, but pretty much everywhere else this week, 187 leagues, as high as 166. The dude just starting to really, really heat up. A little bit of power, lots of speed. It's an intriguing play. I always just get so tilted with their outfielders because there's so many moving parts. Obviously, they traded Dexter Fowler, which opens up some room for sure, but there's still just so many moving parts in that outfield. So I've never really been in on Bader and O'Neill. I guess if you needed saves, it's a really good move. Are you interested or you have any thoughts on Bader?
Yeah, I think he was only available in one league and of mine, and it was maybe a 12-teamer, maybe it was a 15-teamer. I mean, the power speed is obviously what people are interested in. You know, it's a very small sample, but, you know, his contact rate's up so far this year. But the challenge with him is that the batting average is floor is pretty low. And obviously the batting average floor overall for baseball, everybody is pretty low. Right. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous at this point, but, you know, and so maybe that's a little bit less of a concern, but, you know, but the power and the speed aren't necessarily overwhelming, you know? And so that's why I wasn't hyper aggressive on him where he was available in 12 teamers. I really don't think you need to be super aggressive on him. I don't think there's a huge difference between him and whoever you can pick up on the waiver wire in any given week. But in 15s, I can see why people who are looking for a little bit of speed without hurting their power would definitely look his way.
In 15s, I am desperate for outfielders. Like in our TGFBI, I picked up Kai Tom and Jake Bowers.
Yeah, he picked him up in Barf too. I had a
that's what I meant. That's what I meant Barf. Yeah, I meant Barf. Yeah.
I'm desperate. OBP, I mean.
Yeah, for OBP, I am desperate for outfield. Like if you saw my roster, it's a walking graveyard these days. So I'm just every week I'm just replacing guys, praying to get something out of them. It's been fun. So yes, 15 team league outfields. I know Scott Jenstedt talks about it a lot. It is dreadful, absolutely dreadful. I started writing the outfield waiver wire piece at Rotoballer 2 weeks ago, and like you do 50% or less on Yahoo, and I'm like, oh dude, there's all kinds of good players. I'm like, oh no, they're not. Like in 15s, it's like 10% or less, and you're like, oh yeah, that's the guys I'm bidding on. Yep, that's the ones. It's like, oh man, I need to play all 12 team leagues and feel better about life. So much better. But let's go to Houston, starting a young rookie, Luis Garcia, picked up in 187 leagues, max bid of 142. I like this one. I didn't get him anywhere, but we saw the strikeout stuff on full display against an Angels team that does not strike out a lot. Gave up a couple of home runs towards the end of his outing, but he's pitched pretty well. And it looks like for now, there's going to be a pretty steady spot in that rotation. So I think this is one of those kind of like good guys that might give you some run for a little while here.
Yeah, I really like him a lot. I was kind of amazed, honestly. I got him in one of my main events for $32. You know, he's been one of these guys that I've been following for the last few weeks, just because like you mentioned, the skills are really nice. I mean, 13% swinging strike rate, 19.5% K minus walk rate. The control has been not that great, but it's been good enough, you know, slightly above league average walk rate. Has gotten a little bit lucky with the BABIP at 221, but a little maybe unlucky. You never know with the 1.8 home runs per nine. But, I mean, everything looks really good. More than a strikeout an inning, 3.60 ERA, 107 whip. I really like what I'm seeing from him. And so to get him for $32 when he has, you know, that two-step of the Angels in the front half and then the Rangers and both of them at home, you know, later this week, I was just really excited about that. And I got him in a couple of 12 teamers as well. So he's definitely one. I was going to bid pretty hard on him 2 weeks ago, but then, you know, when I was looking at, you know, like the pitching grids and things like that, they had Odorizzi coming back. And so when he was not coming back, I mean, I think it was I really like him. Everything that I see tells me he can at least be an average pitcher, which off the waiver wire, you feel pretty good about. If not, you know, above league average, which, you know, I'll take it.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, that's kind of why I didn't get him at one point, because, like, playing DFS, I'm like, okay, this kid's good. I've used him kind of as a cheap pitcher from time to time, but they were only letting him go four innings, and he was coming out of the bullpen because of Rizzi's back, all these different things. I'm sitting there going, okay, there's no home for him. Well, now there's a home for him. So it's like, okay, this kind of changes things, obviously. It makes things a little more interesting, and that's why I could understand the bids. It's one of the first guys we talked about tonight where I'm like, okay, I get it, because this guy could be a kind of game changer if he keeps rolling out in that Houston system where they're going to score a lot of runs for him at worst. Like, he's going to get his chances for some W's. So I like that one quite a bit. Now let's go to the wonderful Tampa Bay bullpen. Just injury after injury. Like, at one point we had like five closers, then there's just everyone's getting hurt, and now Pete Fairbanks is back. He got picked up in 185 leagues, as high as 109. You'd think he'd be the kind of favorite here, but we saw Kitteridge get two saves over the weekend, but now Kitteridge on Tuesday was warming up to come in after Patino, but Fleming came in. Tampa Bay, everybody. So Pete Fairbanks, I love his stuff. I think he's phenomenal. I think he should be the closer, but Tampa Bay doesn't believe in closers. So what's your thoughts on Fairbanks?
Yeah, Fairbanks, I don't understand it at all, honestly. Like, when he was healthy at the beginning of the season, he wasn't the closer. You know, he's coming back. He hasn't been in it. They've had save opportunities and he hasn't had access to them. Castillo's coming back, like you mentioned. Like, I don't understand the Fairbanks bids at all. Field bar update. He has now given up four earned runs in one. And one in a third inning. So all the beautiful starts I had earlier today, you know, the JT Brubakers of the world, out the window. So cheers.
Yeah. Brubaker was great. I'm not going to go too deep, but seeing Logan Webb strike out 10 in six innings, I was like, yeah, that was that made me feel good, because we liked Logan Webb quite a bit in the preseason, and it was kind of a rocky April with Logan Webb, but we saw some signs of that today. So that was good. And we get Danny Duffy on Wednesday, so I'm looking forward to seeing how that goes, because he's got nice. The Detroit Tigers, who can't hit a lefty. So that means he probably gives up seven. It's just like par for the course type stuff. Eventually the blow-up's coming. But yes, Fairbanks, like you said, it's the guy was their main closer. It was him and Castillo, the left, like they shared the role in the postseason, and he was so dominant in the back innings, and then they haven't given it to him. It's beyond confusing. And the worst thing is, and this is why I could say I wouldn't have spent that money on him, like I agree, but I want shares of him still, because I believe there's going to be a run this year where all of a sudden he's doing it again, just like he did in the postseason. Like, that's just how they do things there, and it's beyond annoying. But like, I just feel it's coming. But yeah, it's hard to spend that kind of money knowing he's not really the closer. Like, it's just and then, like I said, Kitteridge, like I even grabbed him for like a couple bucks everywhere, just like, screw it. I'm not going to go after Fairbanks and spend a bunch of money, but hey, I'll go grab some Kitteridge for cheap, see what happens. And then they got him warming up in the fourth inning today. I'm like, that's good stuff. Go get him, Rays.
Kitteridge or Springs, you know? Go for them.
Just,
the cheaper.
Yeah, that's one thing we keep preaching, is like, when there's three or four guys in the mix, get the cheap ones and see what happens, because they're all going to get their fair share one way or another. Another one coming up here. We talked about him a little bit last week, but I guess I'll bring him up again. Cole Irvin of the Oakland A's got picked up in 171 leagues, $124 max bid. I like what we've seen from Irvin so far this year. He had a little rough outing his last go-around, but overall, I think there's some nice improvements with what we've seen from Irvin, like strikeout stuff, and overall profile's been pretty strong from Irvin. So I know I have him in a few leagues. What's your thoughts on Cole Irvin?
Yeah, I mean, he just strikes me as like the perfect A's pitcher. You know, yes. It's like he's got, you know, he's just like, he's going to do really well at home. He'll do fine on the road. I mean, you know, nothing like jumps out at you. 18.5% strikeout minus walk. I mean, the thing that actually jumps out at me is the control. First pitch strike rate is really great. O swing better than league average. He's in the zone a lot with his pitches. I know he throws fastball or sinker, whichever one it is.
Both
quite a bit. So he's in the zone a lot, and folks aren't doing damage on him yet. And so when you don't walk guys, you can afford to give up a home run here and there, which, you know, he's doing, but not at any type of outrageous rate. So I really like what I've seen so far. He's a perfect, like deeper league, you know, guy that you feel pretty confident throwing out, you know, three quarters of the time, if not more, at least how he's going right now. And then in a 12 teamer, kind of stream him as you see fit. But I like what I've seen so far with Irvin.
Yeah, and looking at his Statcast page, he's got five pitches. He's basically a four-pitch pitcher. Problem is, his four seems like 38% of the time, and his sinker's 21. So in my head, that's like almost 60% fastball pitcher. Like, because unless the sinker's really filthy, like it's heavy, they kind of run in the same pattern for the most part to me. But if you look at where he locates them, they're much different. But the changeup and the slider have been quite effective. So it's one of those, I think, as he develops, maybe they'll start mixing the changeup and slider in a little more, and we might see something really interesting with him that might also affect his command. So we'll see how that goes. Don't want to kind of reinvent the whole wheel with the kid, because he's getting it done, but you might be able to find a way to get some more strikeouts and limit some more damage if they feel the need to. Speaking of catchers, we opened up with Contreras. He's back, Toby. He's back. Danny Jansen got picked up in 166 leagues, as high as $67, because Alejandro Kirk's on the 60-day IL now. So Danny Jansen's in, and he's flexing his muscle. He's still hitting for no batting average, but he's hitting home runs. He's like a mini Mike Zunino out there. So people are running with him. I think it's cool to see him back. He's going to annoy your fantasy team quite a bit because he's got a lot of slow periods. But, hey, he's back.
Yeah, I mean, this is like to the typical MO for Danny Jansen at this point in his career. Just be god-awful to start the year and then go on like a hot streak or two. But, you know, I think the challenge with Jansen, you mentioned the batting average. I mean, his career BABIP now, and you know, obviously it's only 701 plate appearances for a BABIP, but it's 213, you know. Even in his last relatively full season, his BABIP was 230, which just leaves that batting average in such dangerous territory if you're going to keep him in for an extended run. You know, we always talk about how the skills, you know, don't look bad, right? He doesn't chase pitches outside the zone. He makes a decent amount of contact. You know, even the Statcast metrics in the past haven't been that bad, but, you know, it's bad, but I think he's a guy you plug and play based on the matchups. Like, I have him in I think one main event this week, just because they've got, you know, they've got six games, and, you know, I think he was like third or fourth on my list, but, you know, that's what you have to do with catcher if you don't have somebody solid. So find a plug and play. Just don't keep him in there for too long, because it gets gnarly with that batting average.
It's going to get very gnarly. So buckle up and see what you can do. Like, I would have much rather gambled on Contreras, that's for sure. But if you know, maybe Jansen was your backup bid, that's fine. You need to put a healthy body out there. I get it. It's rough, but definitely an option. Brandon Crawford got picked up in a lot of leagues because he came back from a little being banged up, and he's crushing. He's having a heck of a year. The Giants belt Crawford, Posey. It's like it's 2012 all over again. They're all hitting the baseball really well. Crawford, as high as 178. I would not have done that, and I'm a Giants fan. Like, I just – that's not happening, boys and girls. But he's been very, very good, and in deeper leagues, shortstop, middle infield, I could see the viability of running him out there. Just beware, like, he's getting older, things can change, but the power's there. The average is not great, but he's even stealing some bags. So do you got any other thoughts on Crawford?
No, not really. I think, you know, your analysis is spot on there. I think he is kind of a guy who we know who he is, and he's on a heater right now. I mean, his home run per fly ball rate's at 25%, which helps explain, you know, a little bit why he's got the seven home runs. That's, you know, almost 10% higher than it's ever been in any other point in his career. His contact rate is down, you know, so that K rate, you know, could, if things keep up, be a little bit of an issue, but it may be a situation where he's decided to change a little bit of contact for power. You know, barrel rate's higher than it's ever been before. Again, small sample, all that stuff still applies at this point in time in the season. So he's more than likely to regress back to where he is. But the fact that he is making less contact, maybe he's selling out for a little bit more of that power. But yeah, that speed is really nice. I mean, you know, the most stolen bases I've ever had in a season was 7 back in 2016, and he's already got 3 this year. So definitely, you know, a guy, and he's playing every day, which means so much at this point in time too. I'm just pissed. I actually picked him up for, I believe they played in Coors like second or third week in the season, and they had a 7-game week, and I plugged him in there, and I think he got injured. I think he was playing like Philly and the Rockies, and he got injured. So I didn't even get to take advantage. So I dropped him right away. And then what happens? Like, just
goes off.
Yeah.
Yeah. It happens. It definitely happens, but I think he's interesting for sure, because he's showing signs of life. This whole Giants team, the offense is crazy. Like, they're not out of games right now. It's really, really bizarre watching them play baseball, because as a Giants fan, I'm not used to that. But yeah, I'd ride it while you can. Maybe he keeps it going. Maybe have him do Bond there and some other young players to kind of spark him up, keep him going. I don't know. Kapler, as much as I give him a hard time, he's doing a great job rotating the veterans and giving them days off, because they have so many utility and platoon type players. Longo's getting days off. Crawford, Posey never catches more than 2 games in a row. Like, that, they're giving these guys days off left and right. It's keeping them fresh. So I think it's going to be very interesting. You might not get 7 days a week from Crawford, but you could probably get 5 for sure, and it could be very, very productive. So I think it's interesting watching some of those, especially with all the injuries these days. As much as we want 7-5 good matchups, could be quite important right now. A guy I want to ask you about is Seth Brown of the Oakland Athletics, picked up 135 leagues, as high as 128. He's a guy I've been kind of following from a distance doing DFS every day. I can't pull the trigger on him, but he's got 5 home runs on the year. He's hitting 259, decent ISO. Like, he's hitting with some power, playing all over the outfield, occasionally at first base. It's just such a weird overall profile from him that I can't really buy in on it. But I don't know. Have you done any digging on Seth Brown? Because he's been quietly getting picked up in deeper leagues.
Yeah, I think he's just the prototypical A's hitter. You know, I mean, he hits for power, you know, decent on base, you know, contact issues as well. My challenge for him and why I haven't really been able to get behind him, like, I definitely had him pretty far down on some conditional bid lists, you know, because he's definitely intriguing. You know, nice max exit velo, nice barrels, has a history of hitting for a ton of power in the minors. But he's not in a strict platoon. Like, if you look at the last number of games for the A's, you know, he had a period of 3 games where he didn't start in a row because they were facing 3 lefties. Then he did get a lefty on Sunday, but I think that was more, I think on Saturday he had a really good game. So maybe that was kind of more of a reward for what he was able to do on Saturday. But it's really hard to roster guys who aren't like elite, at least elite yet, when they're platooning, because, you know, if you have 3 games in that given the first half of the week and he's sitting for 1 of them, you can't really start the guy with 2 starts. Same thing happens on the weekend. It's nice to think about those types of platoon situations and be like, oh yeah, well, I can manipulate the platoon. Easier said than done with like the amount of injuries that are on benches this year with everything that's happening. So for me, I wasn't in on him, but I could certainly see the appeal most definitely. I mean, Mitch Moreland was available in a couple leagues and I'd rather go with Moreland because I think he's getting more at bats against lefties than Brown is. But, you know, he could be like a guy who hits 25, 30 home runs this year, Seth Brown for sure.
Yeah, no, I'm in the same boat as you. It's like, I guess if you want to say prototypical A's outfielder that might hit 25 to 30 home runs, is he like the next Moss? Was it Mitch Moss?
Brandon Moss. Brandon Moss, Red Sox prospect back in the day. I loved Brandon Moss in the minors. I mean, he did have his seasons, right, where he just crushed it.
Lots of power, not a great average, like Jay Bruce type profile.
For sure.
Well, yeah, it'd be interesting if he fits that mold, but the playing time, definite concern. I just like, I can't bid on this kind of thing right now. Then again, I went and got Kai Tom and Jake Bowers. So,
yeah. I mean, Kai Tom and an OBP and Jake Bowers, dude. I mean, I was looking at Jake Bowers' numbers. People, yep. I'm not back in. I mean, for those of you who are new to the pod, back in 2019, I mean, heading into the 2019 season, Jake Bowers was all the rage for me. I had a bold prediction about Jake Bowers. I absolutely love Jake Bowers. But no, he's been putting it together. Like, I noticed he was batting second today, and I was like,
yes.
Why is he batting second? Like, what's the deal? Like, how awful is this Cleveland lineup? And let me tell you, the Cleveland lineup's bad. Like, Jake Bowers should not be batting second on any team. But over the last, 10 to 15 games, what happened?
Haniger just hit his second of the game off of Buehler.
Oh, man. And guess who's pitching well again? Knock on wood.
Kikuchi. Oh. Yeah, he's looking good,
man. Actually. Oh, man. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, he's, you know, he had a rough little start to the season, but if you look at who he was facing that I think it was Houston, Red Sox, Houston, or something like that.
It's been a rough go for him, for sure.
Yeah, really though. Kikuchi at this point.
Yeah, no, the early schedule was tough. Like, he had a tough early schedule.
Oh yeah,
and what it brings to light, we'll get back to Jake Bauer here in a minute. Yeah. Is this example right here with the Dodgers? Like, if people are looking for streaming, and there's a lot of great content out there, like SP Streamer, Michael Simeone, and Dick Pollock, all these guys, great streaming stuff. But just go to Fangraphs and use a split tool. If you want to just use like the last 2 weeks or whatever, the Dodgers offense, the Padres offense, like some of these big teams that you're just like automatically not starting people against, like they could blow up on any night. We know that. But overall, they're playing really bad baseball right now, like really, really bad, especially versus left-handed pitching. So it's just something to kind of think about if you want to, because no one's going to bid on some of these guys. Like, I'm not saying Kikuchi is already rostered, but you're in certain matchups and say you need a guy to pitch and you want to spend a buck. They're there. It's not the sexiest play, but it's there. So just something to think about. But Jake Bowers, you were saying.
Oh, yeah. Just Jake Bowers over the last 10 to 15 games. The O-swing is like almost at a career low for that period of time. It's like 20% or under. He's hitting the ball very hard, at least hard hit percentage on Fangraphs. You know, the quality of contact metrics have always been his kind of bugaboo, like the Statcast metrics. And so those still aren't great. Those still aren't great. Although his max exit velo is decent. But yeah, he's making a lot of contact, really good plate discipline, getting the ball in the air a lot, and hitting the ball hard. So could be a recipe for success. I mean, if they have a nice little schedule coming up, he might be a nice little add in a 15 teamer just to get plate appearances if they've got right-handers going. Cause you know, even like, you know, it's really a good opportunity at this point in time. Like a good example is Cesar Hernandez. Like Cesar Hernandez, if you look 2 weeks ago, he was hitting like one, whatever. He's probably still hitting one something or other. But like all the metrics were the same as they always are. And actually some of the quality of contact metrics were better. So when you see guys like that, either over a short period of time, like a window of time, or just in general, like hop on it. Like, you know, they have the season. We're starting to see that from both pitchers and hitters, where they're starting to get going, like Jorge Polanco, you know, like was hitting 150. Now he's hitting 240, you know, Andrew McCutchen was hitting 180. Now he's hitting 220, 230. You know, that's the thing that's going to happen. Like if they put together a 300 batting average over the next few weeks, all of a sudden they've got the exact same batting average, you know, or they're splitting the difference, you know, from earlier on in the season. So stick with those guys, follow the skills, not necessarily the results still at this point in the season.
Yeah, and one easy one to point out, I know you tweeted it on Monday, and I wrote about it actually on Sunday in an article
that came out Monday.
If you look at all of Kyle Tucker's metrics, you're sitting there going, he's ready to, that's like Chernobyl. He's ready to explode, and he's already done it. I know it's only like 2 days this week, but the dude, he's too good. We've preached that long enough, but we've had questions in recent weeks, like, should I get rid of Kyle Tucker? And no. Look at the overall. His XBA was almost 100 points off his batting average. Like, even if it just regresses halfway there, you're sitting pretty. It's like, it's crazy.
Kyle Tucker is beautiful. I mean, Kyle Tucker is fantastic. Like, he's a guy, I drafted him in some big leagues in the third round, you know, and I would do it again. I mean, Everything is there. I mean, plate discipline's fine in batting average leagues. He's stronger, obviously, but like the contact rates are all great. Like the batted ball quality metrics are all great. Like everything is wonderful, and he's going to start stealing bases too. And this week he's got 7 games at home against the Angels and the Rangers, hence like why I said it was going to be Kyle Tucker week. And we've already got, I think, a triple run.
He
took Ohtani deep. I mean, the guy is taking Ohtani deep. Come on.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive. And then I also say, don't give up on Tommy Pham, everybody. He already has a couple more hits today, and he stole another base. Like, it's coming with Tommy Pham. I can't remember who it was.
My boy Manny Machado today.
Yeah, he had a big game. But I can't remember who it was. He works for Pitcherless. It's at Chase. I feel so bad for not remembering this. But he did a whole thread on Tommy Pham's, like, deeper numbers. And it just made me feel so much. He said it so much more eloquently than my caveman brain says. So it's like, just follow the path, like you're saying, basically. Some of these guys, hey, it won't work for all of them, but some of these guys will find the back of their baseball card. This is who they are. This is why you drafted them. So just keep that in mind. All right, we'll do a couple more players here, because we actually have some decent list of, like, not they're all decent questions, but like a decent list length of questions tonight. You know, Josh Naylor got picked up in a lot of leagues. He's hitting the ball really well. Nico Goodrum as well. Jonathan VR with Davis out right now. Any other hitters that stood out to you this week? Williams Astudillo went up everywhere. Kevin Pillar. A lot of guys like that.
In shallower leagues, Tyler Naquin, but that was only really for this week. I mean, this week he's got 4 against the Pirates, all righties, and then 3 at Coors, all against righties. So he was a guy in shallower leagues that I went after as a hitter. You know, one guy who, not for this week, but is in a similar spot, is Evan White. Mm-hmm. I tweeted about him the other day. I don't know what to do about Evan White because the batting average is horrendous. It was horrendous last year. But when you look at the profile, last year he had really good batted ball quality metrics, a really good barrel rate. He's got a really nice max exit velo. Like, everything was good, but the strikeout rate was super high. Well, this year his contact rate has shot up. Like, it's better than league average right now. Like, I think it's much better than league average, actually. But the quality of contact metrics have not been there. And so the question is, and those are oftentimes, right, we always talk about how, like, you know, whereas contact rates and chase rates and things like that, they're per pitches, but some of these quality of contact metrics, right, when they put the ball in play is the only time. So we're talking about a smaller sample within a smaller sample. And so it's still possible that those quality of contact metrics from last year can return. And if they do with that contact profile, and it could be that he increased the contact and he gave up some pop because of it, then that won't happen. But if he's able to kind of thread the needle on those and bring that contact rate to a decent level, maintain those quality of contact metrics that he had before, I mean, he's not going to hit 300. He's not going to hit 270 probably. But if he could get to 240, 250, hit you 25 to 30 home runs playing every day in that lineup, like that this year in particular, I think could be really, really valuable because they're playing him every day, kind of regardless of what he does hitting wise. And then that's some value. And I've literally, like, every week in every league of mine, he's dropped and I pick him up and I'm always like, I really want to get Evan White. I can't just put in like a $2 bid. I got to do like $13 or $14. And then every single time, I think every single time it's been no competition at all for him. And so I'm just really hoping that he kind of puts it together. So that's one guy that I've been kind of after a little bit. I picked him up in a really big league as well last year, but again, like, and it's been really actually incredibly frustrating, but, you know, for me, like, I've so much of my attention has been on relievers and pitchers this year, just because of the nature of everything that it has made it really, really frustrating. Cause you know, I want to be paying more attention to hitters, but I haven't been.
Yeah. It's been tough. It's been very, very tough. Some of the other pitchers that went in some leagues, I guess, like Wade Miley coming off the no-no. Do you think people overreacted to that, or do you buy in on Wade Miley? Because he's still not he's striking less than 20% of the batters he faces. Swinging strike rate's like 8.5 or give or take, something like that. He doesn't do it for me, but he's limiting hard contact. I'll give him that much.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of into Miley in the sense that, like, if you look at Wade Miley over the last few years, you know, starting in 2018, again, we're gonna not pay attention to everything that happened before then, or at least the first few years before then. So 2018, in 80 innings, he had a 2.57 ERA, a 1.21 whip. In 2019, he had a 3.98 ERA and a 1.34 whip. You know, last year, I mean, very small, 14 innings, 5.65. But that's all to say, like, those aren't atrocious numbers in today's game, right? If he gets you this year a 4.4 ERA with a 1.3 whip, you know, with about, you know, a strikeout, I guess it's a little less than a strikeout an inning, it's serviceable. I mean, he's not a guy that you need to have on your roster all the time, but when he had two games this week, right? Who do you have?
Yeah.
He's gone in all the 15 teamers.
No, he's only got one start this week.
He's only got one start. It's at Colorado. So I wouldn't have been into that, obviously. No. But, you know, there's, you know, next week, what is he going to have? He's got San Francisco and Milwaukee. So I'd be all over that. Although, you know, streaming lefties against San Francisco has not worked out super well for me, Bubba.
Nope. Austin Gomber. Yep. Flashbacks.
It has not worked that well. I mean, the BABIP is super low, so it could be a very dangerous situation. But, you know, we don't know when they're going to come, but I think by the end of the season, his ERA is probably going to be, you know, 3.5 to 4. His whip will be like 1.25 or something like that. And if he throws a full season, he'll probably have, like, I don't know, 150 innings and 130 strikeouts or something like that, which when played in the right situations is certainly a very serviceable for 15 team leagues. In a 12 team league, I think it's too dangerous to mess around with him unless you know for a fact he's going to throw a no hitter. Then I would put him in your lineup if that's the case.
Yeah, I like how you caveated that. Like, 15 teams, okay. 12, like, I just can't stomach it because I know, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago when he was on a roll, and then remember that blow up when he was pitching for the Astros and just unraveled from there for the rest of the season. I know he said he was like tipping pitches and all these different things, but I guess I have PTSD from that. It was so bad. Didn't even get out of the first inning. It was a Gomber. It was the original Gomber. So that was fun. But a couple other.
And that's what happens with those types of pitchers, though. You know, it's like when you give up a ton of contact, it'll come back to get you.
Eventually, yeah. Eventually, you're just not going to get the miss, swing and misses, and it's going to be like, ooh, no. Like Blake Treinen, mentioned him earlier. I grabbed him in a few leagues. Albert Alzolay pitched on Tuesday. He's been intriguing. Mm-hmm. Tyler Anderson's been pretty
good.
Pittsburgh. So those are kind of the main pitchers that got added towards the top.
Bubba, I have a confession to make.
Uh-oh. What you got?
I set a max bid across all contests.
On Tyler, are you the 132? Oh,
the 103 on Blake Treinen.
Oh, you were the 103 on
Treinen. I was the 103 in OCs.
In 12 OCs, teams. Nonetheless. Didn't you say there was no follow-up bid on that?
No follow-up bid. No. I think I might have got it. Maybe I got him for 13 in one. I can't remember. But here's the deal. I don't mind doing that because I wanted him bad.
Yeah.
And the reason I wanted him bad, I was willing to spend up in 12s, is that he is showing very, very, very good skills. Since he brought in that new slider, like he has been absolutely nasty from a skills perspective. He's gotten a couple saves in the last weeks. One of them was a little bit of a fluky situation, I think. But this last one, I mean, Kenley Jansen hadn't thrown in 3 days.
Yep, that was weird.
He hadn't thrown a ton. And they put him in there in a high leverage game that they felt like they needed to win because they'd already blown that 14-0 lead. And then they throw Jansen, Sunday, you know, was it Sunday or Saturday or yesterday? I can't remember. Sunday. It had to be Sunday. On Sunday, they threw him in the eighth inning when they were losing by one run, And so, and the thing is, like, you want a difference maker, and Blake Treinen is going to be a freaking difference maker if he gets that closer role because the skills are nasty. He's in the best situation in baseball. I don't care what the records are right now. Between now and the end of the season, the chances are the Dodgers are going to have the most wins out of any team. And so if Treinen can somehow find himself into that role, that is going to be absolute fantasy gold.
Yep.
Fantasy gold. And those are the types of moves for me, especially in 12-teamer where it's harder to make a difference, you know, between that is like you go for those difference makers and you go hard for them. And so that's just a very long justification for an unopposed $103 bid on Blake Treinen in a 12-team league.
Well, to add on to that, and mine will be a lot easier for me to say, is if everyone loved Corey Knebel for what he was going to be, Treinen just took his job because Knebel's out. So like everything you loved about that, you're now getting in Treinen. And you got him for a lot cheaper than Corey Knebel went in a lot of leagues. So you got that going for you.
I'll take it. All right. Even though it was the max bid across all contests.
Hey, sometimes setting the curve is a good thing. So you're good
there. You go. I like that. Great on a curve. I got a 103, Bubba. Yeah. I got a 103.
I'm here for you. But let's do some listener questions here, and we'll start out with Mr. Michael Simeone, who I talked about earlier. And he's not here for us because I know he's trolling right out the gate with this. He's the Mr. Luis Castillo fan, but he knows myself. I think you're a little bit as well, but myself especially is a Lucas Giolito fan.
Oh, I'm a big Giolito fan.
And he says, tell me about Giolito. And Michael Simeone, not cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little concerning. Yes, it's a little concerning. I mean, the thing that concerns me the most is the velo. It's only down 0.6 miles per hour over the course of the year. But if you look at his last start, at least the StatCast data, when I was looking at his game day, he was throwing 92.7, I think, on average, which is not good. That's like where he was during the season that he really, really struggled. Now, I don't think he's the same pitcher then because, you know, some of his pitches have taken a step forward. But against Kansas City, only striking out one, I think, in 5 innings. He had 9 whiffs and 93 pitches. I mean, it's definitely concerning. I have him in a variety of really big – he's my most owned of the top, like, 4 or 5 starting pitchers probably. You know, that being said, sometimes these things happen to really good pitchers. Like, look at Shane Bieber. I mean, Shane Bieber was a couple hits today away from having 2 total busts of outings against the Royals and the Cubs, you know, and a depleted Cubs lineup as well. I mean, these things happen to good pitchers as well. So that, I think, best case scenario is that we're witnessing his blip for the year. And even still, like, you know, he's got a 4.5 ERA, a 1.29 whip. He's got 43 strikeouts in 35 innings. So nothing is that bad, but it's just things like, yeah, he's got his highest home run per fly ball since 2017. And we're in the, I don't know if it's called the dead end ball era yet, but like fly balls aren't going out as much as they are. So there's all these little things that are going against them. I didn't read it, but I know Michael Aheto is obviously a great writer for Pitcher List. He wrote an article, I believe it was about, I think it was release point related for Giolito today on Pitcher List. So I would recommend, I haven't read it yet, but I'd recommend reading it just because he's a great writer. And so I'll have to read that and try to figure out exactly what might else be happening outside of velo. But the velo was the big concern for me. And just the way they managed him in that outing against the Red Sox and then the following outing, leaving him in there late when he even like admitted, like, I didn't have anything more.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's not good. And it's screw the White Sox. I mean, they deserve everything that they're getting for hiring Tony La Russa.
Like, yep. It's only a month in and they're already saying they're ready to basically fire him.
He's god awful. Like, and we all knew it. Like, what were they thinking?
Like, what did they think they were getting?
Let's not get down that hole.
Yeah, that's a whole nother podcast. But like the velocity is the biggest concern for me, and it kind of shows because all of his contact rates are up this year because probably easier to hit. Is his whiff rates down tremendously? His barrel rates through the roof, but a lot of that was probably Boston helping out with that one. It's definitely not an ideal situation for Giolito right now, but I'm trying to save face by going, it's early, like you said. He's still a good pitcher. We're going to work on it, but I got to see that velocity get up because that is very, very concerning, to say the least. Our buddy Phil Dussault, the robot, he asks.
No, don't read the question.
When will Caleb Thielber get his first save? A, tonight, B, tomorrow. I'm going to go C, none of the above.
Never, Phil. Never. The better question is, when will one of my main events get its first save? Because
are you still waiting?
I still have zero saves in one of my main events. And let me tell you something else. And this just will tell you how my main events are doing right now. It's my second best main event, but I'm in third place with zero saves.
Oh man.
Zero saves.
You could be, yeah.
Oh, man.
You know what you could be. I don't even have to say it.
I mean, the team's pretty good, but it's also got Giolito, actually. That same team
has Giolito
and zero saves. Well, I've got John Means. I've got, man, I mean, God, like, it's the same thing with another league where we got all these great guys and Luis Castillo is just killing us. Yeah, I have Giolito, Woodruff, Alcantara, Ray, Means, Bumgarner, Smiley. I also have Yarborough. I have some other guys, but like, yeah, I'm holding it together. But yeah. So, anyways, for those who weren't listening earlier on the pod, Thielber pitched 1 1/3 innings and gave up 4 earned runs today. So he totally destroyed all the great outings I had earlier in the day, which is like the worst, you know, when it's like you have these great outings and it's just like, I'm just going to double check and make sure there weren't any unearned runs. Nope. No unearned runs.
Oh, you didn't get the luxury of getting up 6 runs and then
no Morton. He did not pull a Morton today.
That's so tilting. And it's only tilting because I've been Gombert and Giolito'd already. I was like, God, so don't give him, make him earn those 6 runs. Help a brother out. But I feel you there. Our buddy Yancey Eaton, he asks, looking at all of my teams with Kana, Kenner Falefa, Mullen, Cesar Valdez that I drafted super late, and it got me wondering, who are some of your early season MVPs in terms of surplus value from where you took them?
Ooh, that's a really good question, Yancey. Hold on one second.
I can tell you one of mine.
You go.
Jake McGee. Jake McGee and Ian Kennedy. I got him. Ryan Bloomfield tweeted it out the other day. In our slow draft, Ryan and I recorded a bench with Bubba. The news dropped during the podcast. I was on the clock and took Ian Kennedy, like, with my very last pick, round 30 in TGFBI.
Oh, man.
So,
nice.
And I have him in a couple other leagues because that was obviously one of our early drafts. So McGee and Kennedy have been tremendous. Those would be the main ones off the top of my head. I might think of some more, but what do you have?
Yeah, just looking at my player shares page, I mean, I have 13 shares of Evan Longoria, which has been nice so far. I have 12 shares of JT Brubaker, including in like a lot of my really important leagues. I have 12 shares of Ramon Laureano. I mean, he's just been not just the stolen bases now, but he's just smashing the ball. I have 12 shares of Yuli Gurriel, which has obviously been, you know, these are all guys who have, I mean, Laureano went like 150 or 130 or so. So it's not that far back, but those are the types of guys you need to take, you know, kind of big leaps forward to really help you out. I got Hector Neris late, you know, in a few leagues. I got John Means in 9 leagues. Oh, Brian Reynolds in 7 leagues. He's been really good so far this year. Nate Lowe in 7 leagues, including some really important ones. I mean, Robbie Grossman's batting average is gross, but like he had 5 RBIs today. He's got like 5 stolen bases, something like that. Nick Solak in 6 leagues. So you can kind of see like those are the guys that they're not like super deep guys necessarily, but they're all like after pick 150 that are returning much, much better value. So those are some of the guys for me that have kind of come through pretty big.
Yeah, on my player shares page, I had 9 NFBC leagues. Joey Wendell's in 4 of them. He's been pretty productive. But like Mark Canha, Brubaker, Stroman was almost pick 200, so I'll take that one. And Danny Duffy, they've been all been – I have a lot of Danny Duffy in best balls and DCs, so that's been making things very, very nice over there. But
Mark Canha's a miss for me. He's not a miss. I have him in a bunch of leagues, especially OBP leagues, but – I should have been more in on that. I was taking like Justin Upton during that time, and I love Justin Upton, and he's actually been fine. I mean, yeah, he's hitting 210 or whatever like that, but he's also got 6 home runs, I think, 6 or 7 home runs. So, which, you know, you'll take that from where you drafted him. But Canha just hitting the top of that lineup and all the things that he does in terms of stolen bases and power and stuff like that is really nice. And runs. I mean, what is he? He's got to have like 30 runs already this year or something ridiculous like that.
Yeah, he's been a machine. He's stealing bases. Like you mentioned, OBP, he's just been an absolute monster. I pulled him up right now, and as we look, he has 28 runs scored on the year, 6 stolen bases already. He has a 377 OBP and 5 home runs.
Yeah. So, not bad. Got him in my OBP leagues.
There you go.
Are also atrocious.
Mike Carter, the doc, he asks, what do you expect from Kelenic realistically? Many owners drafted and held him. What are we looking at here? Where will he hit in the order? Is he worth having in redrafts? I have him in several keeper leagues. Thanks, guys. You do awesome work. It's like, I know we talked about him preseason. He's got like some people believe 2020 potential, but I'd imagine they got to put him somewhere in the heart of the order the way he's hitting right now. But it is the Mariners, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I always think like the best thing to do if you're looking for realistic idea of what he might do is just go to the projections. I mean, you know, they're all pretty much in agreement at his true talent level, which is a 235-ish batting average, 13 home runs, 6 to 7 stolen bases, but that's in 350 plate appearances. And if he's healthy for the rest of the year, he could get 550 plate appearances. And so then you're looking at a guy who goes 20-10 with a 235 batting average, which, you know, is going to be really valuable. And I think the thing is, you know, there's ceiling there. There's a lot of ceiling there too. I think both in terms of the stolen bases, because the Mariners have no reason not to let him run. But then also the pop. I mean, he really, you know, I think he can do some really, really good things. I have him in a couple of leagues. I have him in one main event. I've stashed him, and I have him in one online championship where I've stashed him, and I'm very much looking forward to it. I was totally tricked by that, the first fake news article, and I switched him into my lineups, and then I saw somebody being like, oh, I got fooled by this. I was like, ah. So.
Yeah, well, he's coming up Thursday, so you can put him in your back end of the week. So you'll be good. You get to enjoy it then.
Yeah, the only bad news is I'm in a league with Jeff Zimmerman and Fred Zinke. They have a team in the main event, and it's just a really good team. Jeff and Fred always destroy my teams. They're like 4th overall, and they have Kelenic, and he's just been waiting on the bench. Yeah, and I'm like, oh, gosh. Yeah,
that stings.
You win some, you lose some.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens with that. Our buddy Dan the Goat, Mr. Buxton himself, hashtag no Buxton reference, hashtag wounded king on this one. I love Dan. He's absolutely awesome.
He's great.
What are some of the best indicators to try and predict future home run positive regression? Searching for more pop from my guys like Pete Alonso, Moncada, and Seager.
Yeah, I think we did this on a recent show as well, but I think the go-to for me if I'm looking for regression, and actually Ryan Bloomfield did a Bloom Boards on this. He was looking at, I think, highest barrel rates with lowest
like home runs per fly ball or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, with lowest home runs per fly ball, and I think that's a really great way to do it. You know, barrels is the best home run metrics we have. It's both, you know, it's predictive, it's descriptive, it's wonderful. And then home run per fly ball rate gives us a lot of indication on what is luck and what is not. And so I think just having something in front of you that gives you both of those metrics. Like I created a custom leaderboard on FanGraphs that gives me all the metrics that I want in one place, you know, and on the right-hand side, I have BABIP and home run per fly ball just to give me a sense of how lucky a player has or hasn't been. And so I'm looking right now at 14 days, but if I were to look at the full season, I'm just going to look at barrel. Let's look at home run per fly ball laggards. I love that word. So with the most barrels, like Yandy Diaz has 5 barrels and 0 home runs. Gleyber Torres has 5 barrels and 1 home run. He's got a 2.9 percent home run per fly ball rate. Starlin Castro has 5 barrels, 1 home run. Luis Robert, I won't cover him. Francisco Lindor has 5 barrels, 1 home run. Jorge Soler has 9 barrels and 2 home runs. Cesar Hernandez has 9 barrels. See, I was talking about him, and now he has 3 home runs. Josh Naylor,
are you doing overall barrels or barrel percentage?
I'm doing overall barrels, not okay, barrel cool. percentage. Yeah, just because that can bring in some small sample spookiness. So those are just some examples. That's what I would do is just run that. Like Jorge Soler stands out to me. David Bodie, 11 barrels, 2 home runs. Jed Lowry, 3 home runs, 10 barrels. You know, I mean, if we want to go to the opposite end of this, you know, it's just Vlad Jr. pretty much. Is all it is.
Who went deep kidding. Again on Tuesday.
Oh, I know. Yeah. You don't want to. I know exactly when Vlad Jr. is about to go off because it's exactly when I'm about to post some snarky comment about my, like today it was like just waiting for that average to dip below 300 and that ground ball rate to hit 50%. You know, on Vlad Jr. And of course he does exactly what he did today just to shut me up. So, but yeah, Vlad is in the top 16 in home run per fly ball rate.
And Dan, I will mention one thing, a plug for a friend, Mike Kerlin started a new thing like Monday through Fridays. He's doing a deep dive on each player, like individual players. And he's actually got one for Yelan Moncada coming out on Wednesday. Might be good, might be bad. No idea. But he's done like Kyle Tucker. He's done Gleyber Torres. He's done a bunch of guys that have kind of been questionable situations to at least kind of – he makes it so you can understand it, yet it has all the good stats as well. So, like, I think it's a really good, quick read type thing. So, check that out on Wednesday. If you're listening to this on Wednesday, check it out today. But something to keep in mind. There's a lot of great content out there that can help you out. Edwin Turnage asks, when setting up your free agent hitter NFBC Fab list – do you use the last 14 days, last 7 days, season long, or all of the above to evaluate rank bids? How do you do it, Toby?
Generally, like my process for when I do bids is depends on the team. Everything is super dependent on the team. Like, because if I need a certain position or something like that, then it's different. But I generally scroll through, you know, I read some articles just to get like a lay of like who's out there, what I might be thinking about. Throughout the week, I'll go through the fab list and I'll just add guys to one really long claim list. So I just have all the guys that I might be interested in. And I'll generally go through every single, I'll go all the way down to 0% owned and do that for both hitters and pitchers. And then I'll generally just look at the last 7 days. Because what I'll do is I'll use FanGraphs for the more in-depth dives on guys, like the 14-day lookout, the full season lookout, all of that stuff. But what I'm really trying to look at when I use any of the things on the NFBC site is just at-bats and Ks. So I'll search by at-bats just to make sure, like, is there a guy that I'm not thinking of who is getting regular access to plate appearances? Or and with a pitcher, like, is there a guy who had, like, an abnormal amount of Ks? I'll also look at innings pitched sometimes just to see if I'm – make sure I'm not missing somebody or something. So I'll generally do that, but then I'm also doing, like, skill reviews. So I'll look at, like, the last 14 days of swinging strike rate leaders. I'll look at the last 14 days of CSW leaders, Z contact leaders, just to make sure I'm not missing a guy who might be breaking out skills wise, but isn't showing up somewhere else for some other reason. And then I'll do the similar thing like to what I just did, you know, for the hitters.
Yeah, I do. Again, I'll shameless plug, but I think playing DFS helps me out a lot to keep an eye like on who's kind of heating up and streaking and whatnot. And then when I go to the NFBC page, I go to the 14 days. I do 14. I see the 7 appeal too, just because I feel like I'm going to be missing on certain things if I don't, but everyone's different. But then you deep dive into other pages, like you're saying. It's just like you make your list that way and you go from there. I think it helps me more so on pitching. Like, I know he asked for hitting, but pitching, I kind of want a 14-day sample because in 7 days, it might get one start. 14 days, it should get closer to 3, possibly. So you kind of get a better idea of how they're actually doing overall, or even relievers. Like, did they have a hot week, a hot couple weeks? How did that go? So I think I like the 14-day sample for me, per se. But, man, do not do end-all, be-all. And the other reason why I like just doing a smaller sample is as we keep going deeper into the season, most players you're adding now are just a stream. So you don't care how their season was, in my mind. Like, you're literally, as much as it's cliche and people hate it, you're looking for guys that are playing well. You want hot streaks. Like, you want guys that are playing well that you can play for a week or two and you're dumping. Like, you don't care what they did the first month and a half of the season. You have zero care about that. So I think because that can cloud your judgment if you look at the full season picture and stuff like that. So I kind of try to shrink it down and go, this is what I want for maybe till the end of the month. Like, just do that for me. So
that it's such a good point because, like, a lot of times I feel like when we're doing this podcast, we're always like crapping on the players that are available. Mm-hmm. And it's literally because of that. Cause it's like if they're available on the waiver wire, right?
They're
like
at this point in the season,
They're not that good, right? Unless it's like NFBC and it's a rookie, you know, who's coming up. Like, they're generally not, they're either injured,
they just happen to get playing time. Like, they just got into a job.
Exactly. So you're just looking to stream these guys. You're looking for good schedules. Yeah. Again, unless there's some sort of news, like a guy gets into the rotation or a guy looks like he might be the closer.
He was dropped a month ago and now he's healthy. Yeah,
totally. Exactly. So those are the types of things I think where you just, don't go in with too high of expectations for some of these guys.
You literally just want them to just help you. Like, Bloomfield said it best on the recent HQ pod. Bloomfield just does amazing work. I can't talk about him enough. The way he talks, the way he writes, it's just he's good. He said it best. Like, most of the time, especially in deep leagues like we play in, you just want a pulse. And so most guys on the waiver wire, they have a pulse, but how good is the pulse? Like, it's so you're not looking for 300. You're looking for, can you get me 240 and maybe a couple steals? Like, can you just go out there and not crush me type situation? So totally. It's crazy. So, yeah.
How many leagues do you have where, like, your bench is literally you've got one guy who's not on the IL?
It's ridiculous.
And you're just hoping that the guy who gets injured this week it has the same position as that guy. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, There's so many competing demands. You got all these closer specs that you need to have because everything is so – it's on this fine line. Then you need depth in pitching because some of these matchups, you do not want to throw a guy in one of these matchups, right? And now then you have to have hitters to be able to get in every single slot in your thing. I mean, there's just so many competing priorities for your bench. So in an NFBC-like league, you do what you can. Like, plate appearances are great, you know?
Yeah, they're gold. Absolute gold. John Wilder asks, he has a decent lead in ERA and WHIP thanks to some middle relievers plus DeGrom, Burns, etc. Would this change your strategy when picking the last 2 to 3 pitcher spots, deciding between a good middle reliever versus a mediocre starting pitcher? I'm 10th in wins and 7th in Ks in FBC 50s, so no pickups. So basically, like, wins and Ks, he's not near the top, but he's crushing an ERA and WHIP. I think you got to go with the starters and get volume if you want wins and Ks. But it's still early to be full panic mode too.
Totally. Is it So no fab in the 50s?
No, it's like a DC. It's the $50 DC that a lot of us were doing early on. Maybe it's not. I don't want to speak out of term. I feel like it's the same exact format as the DC, basically.
Okay. If that's the case, then I think it depends, right? It's like you can't fully punt Ks and wins in that scenario, but ratios can go very, very quickly at this point in time, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it can change dramatically in a single day.
You can get gombered.
You can get feel barred. Like you can just, things can go bad. So what I would suggest doing is one of the things that happens during the course of the year, you know, is there will be a lot of attrition in your league. There will be guys who just stop paying attention, who stop putting in active guys or who at least don't monitor it as closely. And it sounds terrible to base your strategy off of this, but if the rest of your team is doing well and you're competing and you're watching closely, what I would do is pick and choose carefully which starts you use, right? Like if they are questionable, start them in against bad matchups and then have your better relievers in there against other guys. And then when you get like halfway to the season or 2/3 of the way into the season, look to see where you are in wins and strikeouts, right? Is there an overall in the 50s?
Yes, you can win the first place gets a main event ticket. This is the one I was leading a few weeks ago.
Okay.
Second place gets an OC. Third place gets something else.
So you got to balance that. Like if your goal is to win the overall in this particular league, then yes, you need to be a little bit more aggressive in terms of starting guys. But don't – it also depends on how big the overall is. There's a lot of different components.
I would just say
don't start guys that don't feel good. It's never worth it because like they're probably not going to get a win, honestly. Like what is the percentage chance that – a fifth starter gets a win in baseball these days? It's got to be under 20%, like these days, like 25%. And then like with K's, like chances are if you have like Blake Treinen and he's throwing three times in a given week, you're going to get as many K's as probably that fifth starter is. So it's not actually that beneficial to you, I don't think. So that's what I would say. I
100% agree. I think it's, you got to kind of keep it timid. A, it's early, so don't go panicking on wins and Ks yet. And it's a like you're going to be able to rack up stuff here and there, and even a middle reliever is going to get you wins and Ks. I'd rather take that and the ratios that they should bring on paper than the blowups that these fourth and fifth starters could take. Like I've sat two start guys in some of the 50s just because I don't like the matchups for the week. It can bludgeon you in a hurry. So I'm with you on that one, Toby. Okay. Drew at Fru_Dorte asks, thoughts on Ty France? He slowed down the last few weeks after a hot start. Yeah, I pulled him up since the 27th, about 2 weeks ago. He's only hitting like .159. And I'm looking at like his different chase rates and contact rates compared to the season. And they've, the contact rates are still there. You look at his swing rates, they're still like pretty similar. Everything's really similar. He's actually swinging strike rates gone down during the slump. So, I don't know. I'm a Ty France fan, so I might be biased. So what are your thoughts on him?
I don't have any France, so I haven't been monitoring the playing time that closely. But what I'll say is everything looks decent under the hood. The home run per fly ball rate is very low, 8.3%. So is the hard hit rate, though. But his contact rate is really, really nice. The O-swing is fine. Max exit velo is the highest that it's been. Average exit velocity is slightly higher than he's been. He's got 9 barrels and 3 home runs. So I think he's fine. Like he is who Ty France is, right? I mean, if you were expecting Ty France to hit you 30 home runs this year, you know, he's not going to be what you wanted him to be, but he's pretty much in line, maybe slightly unlucky with what the projections, you know, have him projected for. And so I wouldn't move too far off of that. If you're keeping him in 12 leagues, I don't think that's necessary at all. I think you can, but 15s.
15s you hold for sure. Cause the one thing he brings is massive multi-position flexibility, like big time. If I think first base, second base, third base, outfield in some leagues. Mm-hmm. So you got him all over the diamond. And if you want to talk about a guy, if like his X stats, there should be some more positive regression coming his way. I think he's still doing very, very well. And they're still hitting him anywhere from second to fourth every day still. So he's still in the heart of that order. So I wouldn't shy away quite yet. I even saw tonight while we're recording, I have the Dodgers-Mariners game on, and he hit a bomb to the wall in center field.
Have the Dodgers scored any more runs?
Yeah, they just scored right now. They've chased Kikuchi in the seventh. It's 4-2.
How long did they keep Kikuchi in there for?
They brought him out to the seventh. He threw like 117 pitches. He had 11 Ks, but he didn't have it after a while.
What are they doing?
Yeah, I was watching. I didn't want to say it. I'm like, he's at 105 to start the seventh, and I'm like, just take him out.
At 97 pitches, and he gives up a single, and you just leave him in there?
Yeah, it was.
Now it's 4-3.
Yeah.
No, what a god awful
managing. Yep. Baseball, baby. There's reasons why some teams stay some teams.
And why on earth do you not bring in Graveman there, too? Yeah.
Ben Tidd, our buddy Ben, he asks, how have or will you change your mindset when it comes to analysis, both hitting and pitching, considering BABIP is around 283 and averages the lowest it's been since at least 1968? Do you think things will correct themselves, or is this the new normal with today's ball? Unfortunately, I think it's the new normal for at least this season, which sucks. Like, I don't think how that's going to change anywhere. And I'll let you have the floor because you're going to say probably way better analysis on this, but I'm not affecting my analysis too much because it's equal across the board to me. It's when we tried to decide what's the ball going to do, like 5%, this and that. We don't know. Like, obviously, it favors guys with higher batting averages, but as a whole, I think it's going to be kind of a fluid situation across it. I could be totally wrong, though. So what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, let me just run a little. I mean, my general thought is, yes, it's going to be lower. And the reason it's going to be lower is, number one, the shift. There's more and more data, and you know, that is keeping certain guys from having a higher BABIP. So it'll impact guys who hit those ground balls to the pull side in particular. But then I also think what's happening is the BABIP on fly balls is down a lot. Let's do this. No, I can't do it. Let me just see here. So in all of baseball, the BABIP on fly balls is 109 this year. The BABIP on fly balls. Now remember, fly balls normally have a very low BABIP because home runs are not counted, right? But you're going to get fewer home runs already. So you're getting more fly balls that stay in play, and they are going to have a super low BABIP because they're fly balls. So normally they get caught. So this year it's at 109. Somebody else did this. I saw them do this online. So I'm stealing what you did, but so it's 109 this year. In 2020, it was 106 in 2020. So maybe I'm just lying. Maybe I'm just making things up. This is why it was 118 in 20. Oh, well, 2020 was a small sample. It's 118 in 2019. 117 in 2018. So you're losing, like, you know, essentially 1% in terms of fly balls that land in there. And then I would also guess that ground ball BABIP have been down as well. So, you know, yes, I think it'll be down. I do think that it will. I think it will adjust back a little bit. I don't think it'll stay as low as it is right now. But I think there's just guys, yeah, who have been overly hurt by it. Like, there's how many sub-200 BABIP guys are there out there right now that it's just, like, brutal. And you're like, how long can I keep this guy in my lineup for, you know? But as we've seen in the past, like, those types of things generally tend to work themselves out. So it sucks. Major League Baseball is like, what a bunch of...
Yeah,
not intelligent people.
Yep, it's fun time. Our buddy Lil Book of Calm, he brings a good question. Toby and Scott White have similar voices, love pitchers, and we're not in on Vlad this year. Can you confirm that they're actually different people? That's been confirmed. We're good. Also, would you rather have Andrés Giménez or Dylan Moore rest of season? It's an OBP redraft league, or just play the hot hand with on the wire, basically.
It's a what league?
An OBP redraft. Redraft, so not a keeper dynasty. He didn't say the depth, so I'm guessing, let's say 12 teams. Let's just go 12 teams.
I mean, Giménez is really hard because
he's not playing enough.
Yeah, he's not playing enough. He's at the back end of the lineup.
If it's 12 teams, I just play the waiver wire. Moore's
not playing that much.
Yeah, I play the waiver wire personally. But that's tough. At 12 team, it's okay. 15, you're kind of screwed. But
yeah, I mean, I'd probably rather have more, but I wouldn't want either one of them in my lineup all the time. I want to really play the matchups with them. Like, that's what I'm doing with Jimenez. Like, they have three righties, I think, early this week. So he's in my lineups, had a stolen base today, you know, just that type of stuff. But, you know, Moore sitting seventh. He has played the last six games at least. So I'd have Moore in there just because he's much more of an OBP asset. I think probably steal a similar amount of bases, and he has more power probably than Jimenez does as well. And you're not hurt as much by the batting average, but both of them have really low batting average floors. But so I'd go with Dylan Moore.
Yeah, if I had to pick between the two, it's Moore. If I could play the waiver wire, I would in a heartbeat over those two. Simon P. asks, some guys for deep NL only, if you would. Connor Joe with Crone on DL, and can he stick? Also Jordan Holloway in Miami. Can he stay in rotation? Play a value role out of the bullpen? Thanks.
Who is the first guy?
Connor Joe with Crone on the DL. I think Matt Adams gets most of the time there over Connor Joe, but like, that's just going to be a platoon to me personally. Holloway is interesting in an NL only if he's going to be in the rotation, but I guess if I had to, I'd be willing to give Holloway a shot depending on who you're dropping. Connor Joe, I'm just not there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't really play NL or AL onlys, so it's really hard for me to say. I guess you just take a stab at them and don't put them in your lineup if you can, because theoretically people who are just breathing and playing in NL and AL onlys are really valuable. But I mean, Joe could be interesting. He could get three or four games a week.
In Coors or something.
In Coors, yeah. Like he's not a bad, like, from a, he doesn't have a prospect pedigree, but I think his production in the minors was pretty good.
Yeah, if we see him actually get to play, I'd like Joe. I'm just worried they're going to put Matt Adams out there too much. That just annoys me. The thing with Holloway, I like him quite a bit. He's a heavy slider guy and a heavy ground ball guy. So the strikeouts, he's almost like a harder throwing Tyler Rogers. So just keep that in mind. The upside is going to be kind of weird, but in an NL only, like, I can see the appeal for sure. He'd be great in an opener type situation. That's where he'd thrive. I just don't think Miami's going to do that, but I don't mind giving Holloway a shot in NL only. Nick Zach asks, sell high on Means for Giolito straight up in a points league. I would personally, but I am very biased on Lucas Giolito. Maybe Toby's got a better answer for that.
Giolito straight up for Means. Is that what you said?
In a points league.
In a points league. Yeah, I would do that.
Yeah.
I mean, this is what is, it's so difficult because Means has been really, really good. You know, he's been lucky, but the data also supports him being a good pitcher. And Giolito is struggling, and there may be broader issues, but Giolito's a league winner. I don't think Means is a league winner. You know, maybe he is. Maybe he is, right? Like, in a deeper league, you know, that may be the case. But so I would say yes. I would do that.
Yeah, I would too. I think the ceiling's much, much better there. And our last question of the night, Taylor Johnson asks, I have Burns coming off the IL and need to cut one of Tyler Anderson, Hyung Kim, Alzolay, Luis Garcia, Brubaker. Does anyone stand out from that group to cut?
Ooh, it was talk about very similar.
I'd cut Kim. I'm not a Kim believer. Too much pitch to contact for me, but
let me take a look. I'm pretty familiar with the other profiles, but I know Kim struck out six today. Five and a third, six.
And that was the Brewers, though. And I don't know if you have the Statcast, or if you're not, I'll look it up. The little bits I saw, they were loud outs.
Yeah, I mean, they all look good. Brubaker had another win today. God, love that guy.
I like Brubaker. But I guess Brubaker is one of, like, the least proven of the group, if you kind of want to go. Luis Garcia is a rookie, for Christ's sakes. Maybe not, but.
Yeah. Ty Anderson, Brubaker.
Oh, sorry. It was Anderson, Brubaker, Kim, Alzolay, and Luis Garcia.
I might do Garcia or Anderson, maybe. I mean, I really like what Tyler Anderson is doing, but a little less upside in terms of Ks. So maybe Anderson, but then with Garcia, he's not, you know, once Odorizzi's healthy, I don't know if he's in there. And the volume.
Framber's coming back too.
Framber's coming back. So I might get rid of Garcia.
Because you might get Garcia for about 2 to 4 more weeks max probably. And then there's going to be 2 pitchers vying for that job pretty soon. So
yeah, because I mean, Kwang-Yun Kim, he actually looks pretty good from like a skills perspective. Like his BABIP is high at 130. That's just because he has a 346. I mean, his whip is high at 130, but that's just because he has a 346 BABIP. Swinging strike rate's at 12.5%.
Real quick. Does that BABIP concern you in a world with low BABIPs?
No. Okay. I mean, unless, you know, nobody should really have a 346 BABIP unless he's like supposed to. I mean, the batted ball metrics aren't that great, right? He's got a very high barrel rate. He's got the hard hit rate's not that big. But the thing is, like, that's all small sample stuff, you know, like that can change in a heartbeat. And if he's got good K metrics, if he's got all of that stuff, then that will theoretically, you know, he gives up less contact. So it's less likely to hurt him. He's in a good stadium with the Cardinals. They've gotten a better outfield. So everything checks the box for him in terms of being 18.4% K minus walk rate, really good in zone contact rate, really good O swing. So again, things could change, but I do like what I see. I think he's in the rotation firmly. So I would go him over Garcia probably right now.
All righty. That is our last question tonight. So that'll wrap up another episode of Bubba and the Bat Flip. Toby, final thoughts as we are into week 7, which means we're almost 2 weeks into the baseball season. Or two months into the baseball season.
It's May. May's a great month. Just continue to enjoy it and good luck out there. It's tough out there. Right now.
It's a grind, but it's a long ways to go. So don't completely get crazy yet. And fab bids the last couple of weeks have gotten down overall price wise. So it's kind of been fun to watch. I think because one reason everyone's spent a lot of money, and B, I think people are starting to realize, you know, let's not go too crazy just yet. So that'll be fun to keep an eye on. But yeah, as usual, good luck, everybody. We'll be back with you guys next week to talk some more fab and your listener questions. Keep them coming. Those are some good ones tonight. So give us some more of those next week. We'll get you some stuff. Toby is on Twitter at BatFlipCrazy. I am at BDIntric, and we'll catch you guys next week. See ya.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.